Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
KMA Audio Machines' comprehensive range of premium effects pedals are extremely impressive. Coupling some of the best looking graphics and best sounding circuits with some of the most original reimaginations of classic effects pedals that we've ever seen. From the wild and soaring high gain distortion of the Worm to the classic ripping fuzz tones of the Fuzzly Bear, Minos and Dead Stag, the swirling phaser of the Astro Spurt, the treble to full range, Stock Her treble booster, the synthy octaves of the Moyai Mayer and the Queequeg, to the incomparably expansive wash of delays and verbs from the Cirrus and the uniquely controlled mid-accentuated drive of the incredibly dynamic Logan. The list is comprehensive, and every pedal offers something original and unique to KMA's penchant for extreme controllability. Available worldwide from leading guitar effects pedal dealers, and for more info, check out kma-machines.com. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. This is the 271st episode. I'm your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by the marvellous Matt Knight.
Hello.
And the gyrating J Cross.
Excuse me?
Well, that's what I imagine you're doing.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you know, you're probably not a million miles away. It's been a really nice day today. I had the day off work. I went for a run this morning, which was really hard work because I forgot to have dinner last night.
Ooh.
So burning off
your fat supplies.
That's it. Yeah. Of which I have many. I went out for a run this morning. That was really hard work. And then it was a really lovely day. So I went and sat on the beach and drank a couple of beers.
Oh, how lovely.
Yeah. Nice. Blooming lovely.
Nice. Wonderful. What did you do today, Matt?
Worked. I did actually go for a run this morning. I've been tending to my garden, been growing some vegetables and some flowers.
Well done, Joe. You held that together marvellously, I have to say.
And apart from that, things are looking good.
So, speaking of running, Matty and I have kind of got a very friendly rivalry going on with our running at the moment.
A runny rivalry.
And like, we're both friends on one of the running apps, and yeah, so anytime one of us does a run, we get a notification that the other one's done it, and so we have just found each other constantly being like, oh no, I've got to go out for another run, because
it's incredible. It's been such a great motivator.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about just like going out on a scooter or something like that?
I've with seen the a lot app of on. People on electric just, like, scooters recently.
In order to get your score up.
Turning the thing on, yeah. That is a great idea, and I might have to do that, because I've just seen that actually Matt is on 104 kilometres for the month, and I'm only on 98, so I have got a little bit of catching up to do. Although I've been running a little bit faster, so you know we're more or less even. But yeah, we both did about 150 kilometers last month.
Yeah. Wow!
And it's been good. It's like this is, because people keep saying to me like, oh yeah, but I bet you're looking forward to there being races and stuff again. It's like, I don't care about races. I run for myself and also now to beat Matt. So like, that's what I'm into.
And we're all just trying to beat Yoshi.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Yoshi, the president of Boss.
Also incredible runner.
Yeah.
Just, yeah, I put some serious distance in. But that's been the good thing, I think. Working from home, getting a bit more running in.
That's good.
Balancing in, you know, adding a bit more guitar playing.
Yeah.
Especially during the day. You know, I sit next to all my guitars. At least I can kind of sit and, you know, tinker around for a little bit.
I'm the same, actually. I think I've been playing a lot more bass just because it's just there next to me. And I just pick it whenever I'm like, you know, oh, I've got a call in 5 minutes. It's like, well, there's no point in me doing anything. I'll pick up my bass and just play bass for a bit. It's great.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been good.
What guitars do you have sort of immediately available to you, Matt? What ones do you have out and about?
Well, because I didn't used to work from home, I used to work in the office, come home, and I'd probably only play guitar like once or twice a week. You know, like in the evening, it'd have to be like an actual like effort to like plug stuff in rather than just sit and play anything unplugged. I've been trying to switch through all my guitars. So I've got 3 wall hangers and then a 5-way guitar stand, and I'm trying to like rotate them round. But I have been gravitating towards the Nick Huber more than anything.
Really?
At the moment, especially where it's so hot. Some guitars have slightly sticky necks, you know, just kind of get a bit stuck. So what's the
neck on the Huber? Yeah, I assume it's satin.
It's unfinished mahogany.
Oh, okay.
So it's like almost like raw mahogany.
So are the sides and the back of the guitar also matching in a sort of raw
mahogany?
Well,
so what's weird, and I was looking at this the other day.
Because it's a set neck, the Huber.
It's a set neck. It's a set neck. It's mahogany with a rosewood fretboard, and then the binding is maple.
That's such a lovely combo.
I think it's actually... Do you remember those limited edition Fender Jazzmasters that had the inlaid fretboard?
Are you talking about the channel-bound?
Channel-bound, that was it, yes. I've got a feeling it's just almost done the same way. But it's been good to just actually play them unplugged. not even plug them in, just sort of like actually just sit there and play guitar. In fact, I've been using the Wild Rares a little bit, but
What guitar do you find to be the most resonant now? Like unplugged, resonant.
The Huber
guitar
is very good, but... still the Music Man is an absolute dream to play. Just one of those guitars that you just like, yeah, you go, I've got 5 minutes before a meeting, and then you're like, oh no, my meeting started 5 minutes ago. But yeah, the Huber and the Nick Huber and the Music Man are definitely the two.
What's
two
the name
top
of
ones.
The Huber model?
The Krautster.
That's it.
Krautster. I didn't also... I knew these guitars are... The Krautster's relatively expensive. It's the cheapest one in their range. It's not like insanely expensive, but...
But the Hubers don't really start, at a very affordable price point.
You know, what you'd expect for a boutique handmade guitar. But I mean, some of their models, the Dolphin is like... $7,000, I think they start at.
Wow.
Yeah. They do an amazing like big body bass as well, like an F-holeless single cut sort of almost jazz body big bass, which is like a dream with a big chrome pickup in the middle. It looks so amazing, but starts at about $5,000. So I'm like,
if I could afford another one, I would be super tempted for the Surfmeister, which is their sort of... This one's almost like a more telly-shaped, top-bound, with a Bigsby and a couple of TV Jones.
Sounds cool. Is that actually a bolt-on as well?
No, it's a set neck.
Oh, really? Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's a set neck, which I think is... Which is very, very cool. I was looking at Rock and Roll Relics the other day as well. I was like, oh, God.
Man, Rock and Roll Relics aren't a brand that we talk about enough on this podcast, because they are absolutely wonderful. Like, as a brand that are predominantly, obviously, Gibson alternatives, they are absolutely worth every penny. They look incredible.
Yeah, I... I just remember I was looking through some old photos, and I remember their booth. They had what they call the Lightning model, which is like a 335.
With the Lightning F holes.
And they did a Shell Pink one, and I was just like, oh man, I just.
Oh really?
Good. But no. I tell you, I text everyone in the in our sort of Guitar Nerds group the other day, but I just really want a Gretsch. I really want a white a penguin or a white falcon.
Which one? You've got to choose. Is it a white penguin or a white falcon?
I really think if I sat down and played one, it would just be whatever one played the best. And whatever I could find, there's a very particular white penguin that I'm after, which is a model they don't make anymore, which has different pickups in it.
Right.
So the current one has the Filtertrons, but they did a different one, and I can't remember the name of the actual pickup, but they're like black with gold pickup screws. I think they're still TV Jones, but maybe it's like the Powertron or something. They're slightly smaller, and they just look wicked. But if I had to go for a white Falcon, I was looking at loads and I was like, when you buy one secondhand and the white's gone slightly off colour,
yes,
they look so much better than they do like brand new when they've gone like a tiny bit yellow. And I'd have to get one without a Bigsby. I was looking at it and I was like, Bigsby's cool, but I'm just like, it'd just be a Nors. I just felt like, just get a hardtail one.
They are a pain. Fridge. I mean, they're not. I mean, depending on what you get, obviously, if you're getting a historic one, like a proper vintage correct one, then they've got the really annoying Bigsby. But there are like modern style where you don't have to go up and over and up and over and round the corner and down to the shop and back up again before you can, you know, string it up. So it's not, there are ways around it, but yeah, I mean, if you're getting a penguin, then
it did all you know, when you sort of fall down a bit of a guitar hole, you're just like, oh, just looking at all these nice guitars, and it really came down from, I was on the GAC website because they currently have a master built G6136T 59 Falcon relic. So it's a Stephen Stern relict Falcon in seafoam green. And it
I saw this. Absolutely
incredible.
The relicking on this particular model is absolutely unbelievable. The lacquer checking is incredible.
It just looks so good. Horrendously expensive.
How much is it? Because I did see they shot a lovely little video of this the other day, and I was like, that is one of the best looking guitars I've ever seen, but I didn't see a price tag for it.
10,000.
Woof.
But I'll tell you what, they have got right now, they have got a Masterbuilt Duojet, which has got the same pickups that I'd like in a Penguin, which I'm just trying to have a look and see if I can find what they are called. They're not like normal ones. No. Oh, Seymour Duncan, the Dynasonics. That's it. Dynasonics. Yeah,
Dynasonics.
Penguin with Dynasonics. But I don't know the full differences between the things like the Duojet and the Penguin. I'm sure there's some body shape differences. I don't know if the Duojet's solid and maybe the Penguin is hollow, but I'd have something like this happily any day.
I mean, it's in Lake Placid blue as well, which obviously is quite unusual to see a Gretchen. It really works. It's a great color for those.
But in fact, actually, I'll tell you one that's really nice, which is I think still a current model. Jay might know off the top of his head. Is the Stephen Stills? They do an aged white Falcon, which is a more reasonable price, which I guess those ones are made in Japan, but there's some great ones out there, but I'm just like, it's the one bucket list guitar I've never actually owned. Like, I'd love to have like a 335 or, you know, a 59 Les Paul or whatever, but I've always wanted a White Falcon.
You have spoken about them for some time. I really think that's an itch you should scratch.
Yeah, I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait till I go to
until you're going to wait until your mate who you know who's got some good contacts in terms of bringing in some Japanese guitars.
That's the one.
Exactly the one. That. Yeah, yeah.
you know, Matt, there's been in GAC for a little while and still in stock. That was there back when I was there, but there's they've got one of the, in fact it could well be a different one, obviously it doesn't have to be the same, this isn't especially custom shop, but the Gretsch, how does it supposed to be said, is it 6128, is that how we're supposed to do it?
Yeah.
So they've got a G6128T, which is the George Harrison signature duo jet, which is absolutely fantastic in every way, shape and form. You know, just a gorgeous like jet black top, and then you've got sort of the mahogany back and sides to the jet.
Yeah,
but, I would super cool.
Yeah, Gretsch. I mean, when I went to Japan, last time I went to Japan, down the sort of main street, there was a Gretsch specific
main street,
dealer.
Main Street Japan.
Main Street Japan.
Yeah.
Street One Japan. They were specifically like just a Gretsch dealer. They must have had like 150 Japanese built Gretsches on the wall.
Wow,
just like,
amazing.
Oh, wow. Man.
There's speaking of Gretsch and sort of carrying on the stock at GAC, which is what we've ended up doing. Actually, this has been sold, but I remember shortly before I left, I got to demo the Gretsch Duane Eddy, which is the bass six that they do, like the is it a 30 inch scale? I can't remember if it's actually a 30 inch scale or maybe a 27, but. Oh, I'm not sure. Maybe I think it was a 30-inch scale because it was a full bass six, wasn't it? Yeah, so it would be Bigsby mounted, like double cut, big hollow body Gretsch, and it just they sound absolutely ridiculous. It has the big, you know, when they have like the G cut into the sort of upper lower bout of the guitar. Yeah, very very cool. Oh,
speaking of bass sixes, I don't think I mentioned this the other day, but maybe. Did we talk about it? I watched Enter the Dragon for the first time. I'd never seen it before. Did we talk about this on the podcast?
No, I don't.
Yeah, we did. We talked.
Did we talk about it, or did we just? Yeah. Anyway, so I watched Enter the Dragon on a couple of weeks ago, and like I don't really know much about Bruce Lee, and an advert came up being like, oh, this check out this documentary on Bruce Lee. It's really good. And my girlfriend, who's like. It, like she's a bit of a film buff, she was like, oh, if you've never seen Enter the Dragon, we should watch that. And I tell you what, the soundtrack to Enter the Dragon, like just like the incidental music, is so good. There's like bits where there's like just a bass six just like plodding along like a weird little bass line whilst there's like sort of creepy stuff going on. Bruce Lee like sneaking around a cave looking for people, and there's bits where there's like there's just a theremin playing. And like honestly, the like incidental and mood music throughout that movie was absolutely incredible. So you know, as well as it being a wicked movie, just some of the stuff cool that's going on in the background there, and it really made me think, oh, maybe I should get a bass six so I can just like put it through a bunch of reverb pedals and just pretend that I too am in a kung fu movie.
They are a lot of fun, bass sixes. I've still been meaning to get that obvious mod, the Mustang bridge, to sort out the bridge issues with my bass six. I still have yet to do that, which I think makes me play it less, because of course that, you know, the older bridge really wasn't cracking. Something that's been fixed, because I've got the old Squire Vintage modified. Now, since that range has been changed to the Squire Classic Vibe, that is in fact something that they have rectified. So
yeah.
Now, listener, if you purchase the most affordable bass six you can buy, it's actually fantastic. Like, no mods required. That will be an amazing bass six.
Just need, just need to get it repainted into, you know, a real colour.
Wait,
pink.
Wait. Oh, yeah. I guess you could. I mean, yeah. That you know, it is. Even though I'm not actually like, I love objectively, I really like Shell Pink, but I don't think I'd ever play a Shell Pink guitar or bass, except for maybe in the case of the Bass 6, because it just looks so incredibly cool in Shell Pink, which, of course, the bass player in Jay, as you introduced me to, and we've spoken about before, Football, etc.
Yeah.
She plays a Shell Pink Bass 6. Incredibly cool and very cool guitar indeed.
Custom shot one, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, it is custom shot one.
Oh,
yeah.
I think she was playing that before Squire or what was the first reissue? It was the Fender.
Vintage Modified.
No.
There was a Japanese one, actually.
No. It was the Fender one that had the humbucker in a P90 housing in the bridge.
Modern player, I think because that was Mexican made guitar.
Yeah.
And so that would have just been like the Classic Player series, I guess. But
Modern player, I think it was, because it was such a like a different pickup selection. Like, you didn't have the individual pickup buttons, you had like a five way or something.
Yeah. I can't remember. That was a very weird guitar. Very weird guitar.
It was weird, but I kind of feel like that was the guitar that Fender were sort of testing the water with, that have, you know, all these years later led to the led to there being so many Bass Sixes back about in both Fender ranges and kind of across the board from loads of other brands as well. Do you know what? I was doing something for a Guitar Nerds video that I'm editing at the moment. I'm doing some bass videos at the moment. I wanted to do something that I actually cared about. So I'm doing this thing on, like, I'm doing a little series on short scale basses and another little series on short scale bass players as well. But I Google searched Fender Bass 6 players to see, like, you know, who are the most famous people to play a Bass 6, and I am one of the image search
results.
No, you're
not.
I am it just on an image search, so it doesn't matter. But because I got like the first demo out for the modern player Bass 6 that we're talking about, I mean, I couldn't play it, but at the time. I think at the time that we did that video for GAC, I didn't really play guitar back then. Like, when we started at GAC, I really wasn't a guitarist at all. I was only a bass player. And so I did the Bass 6 video, but I basically couldn't play with a plectrum, and I couldn't really fret on a neck that small. And so it was awful. It was one of the worst demos you'll ever see. But a still from that has still made its way into sort of easily the top 10 pictures of
goodness me.
Terrible. Terrible.
Have you, just out of interest, if this is a horrible spoiler, but have you included Tina Weymouth from Talking Heads in your short scale bass players video?
Funny that you mentioned that, but actually, because she's had such an incredible range of short scale basses, like, if I kind of think there's like Bill Wyman and Jack Bruce were short scale bass players that had lots of different, like, they're not known for just one. They played lots of different ones. So I actually thought, well, this is actually a really cool kind of story in itself. So whilst I'm still putting out the videos on, I'm doing sort of my favorite, like, cool, weird, affordable short scale basses, and then I'm doing another one on, like, the most legendary short scale basses. But I decided to do a little series. I haven't decided whether it's going to be top fives yet, or if I'm just going to focus on it. I probably will just focus on an individual for each video and just do a, like, you know, the cool instruments of. And I wanted to do Tina Weymouth as one of the first ones, because when it comes to, you know, I am a big fan of short scale basses, a big fan of Talking Heads as well, but she had some incredibly cool instruments. Like, she was, you know, one of the players playing the Gibson Les Paul Triumph bass. Do you remember those?
Oh, yeah, okay. Which are just
incredibly cool. And then there's, like, she did some cool things with, like, an old Hofner club bass. The only things I'd seen were some video footage of it, but it looks like she's fitted cloth underneath the floating bridge on an old Hofner club bass, which is very interesting. And then she had the Competition Stripe Mustang bass.
Yeah, that's the one that I always
she plays it in that video, the the I can't remember what song, but
Disco Bear.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly that. But yeah, super cool. Super cool collection of basses, you know, along with, and it seems to be something potentially that short scale bass players, I guess, maybe did, maybe flip from bass to bass throughout their time. And yeah, there are definitely some super interesting ones. Found some footage of her playing a one of the headless Strandberger basses as well.
Steinberger.
Steinberger. Steinberger. Yes.
That is a, Steinberger. That's a mixed match, yeah.
Yeah. but yeah, super cool. So, yes, yeah, well spotted, Jay. That's nice. Exactly what I'm going to do. Anyway, actually, before, because this is still, of course, the intro of the podcast, before we move any further, I should introduce our new patrons for this week. Hello to, and thank you for joining, to Christian Avila. Welcome, Christian. I got that name right. And also entering at our top tier, at our executive producer tier, Cloud Lifter. There you go. So those two. I'm not no fake names this week,
yeah,
guys.
I was going to say Mark Packham might be laughing at this point, but it's a real name.
Those are both legitimate. So yes,
yeah, nobody's called welcome, Christian. But... That's ridiculous.
Yes, exactly. But yes, so hello and welcome. Anyway, I put out a post and said this week I thought, you know, because we weren't going to have Mark this week, it would be great if we could take some questions from the group, just for Matt and for Jay, so we could talk about you two now that we don't have, you know, the eclipsing head of Mark Packham there, sort of taking up all the airtime. But before we should, in fairness, it is disproportionate. Yeah. We should, of course, talk about this week. I didn't think this was going to happen. How has this happened again? We thought when that fella from Microsoft bought Jimi Hendrix White Strat for £2 million, we thought that that's surely going to be the most expensive guitar ever. To be purchased until last year, when of course we had Dave Gilmour's Black Strat go for an absolutely whopping $3.8 million. But it's just been absolutely smashed out of the park by the newest, most expensive guitar ever to be sold, and it's Kurt Cobain's Nirvana MTV Unplugged guitar. Let's talk about that.
I was thinking about this quite a lot, and it made me realize how much more important Kurt Cobain is to guitar playing more than David Gilmour. I think David Gilmour's guitar is so. Yeah, I think David
Joe
Gilmour,
has just hung up and he's walked out of the room.
I think this, you know, and we say this, we've talked about, you know, people like Slash and stuff before. David Gilmour is, you know, my hero. Don't get me wrong, it's an absolute hero of mine. But I don't think, you know, after a certain point, they gained less new fans, and there was much more of the kind of solid fan base that they'd already had that carried through all the way to now. But no, I don't think they've had as big an impact on pop culture.
Yeah.
As Kurt Cobain. And I think, you know, you've got people wondering, I mean, you've got Nirvana t-shirts. People wearing Nirvana t-shirts probably don't even know who Nirvana is. I don't think you'd necessarily get that on Pink Floyd. And
I don't know. I think, you know, places like Primark sell Nirvana t-shirts just as much as they sell Dark Side of the Moon
t-shirts. Probably The Wall more than Dark Side of the Moon. Yeah, but maybe.
I don't know. I think the guitar reached that value not because of the guitar it is, but because of the person who played it. Where I think the Black Strat reached that value, and definitely a worthy value because of how iconic the guitar is. I don't think it was the guitar that made this value. No, it's Kurt Cobain. that.
Yeah, and I gave so it the value. Funnily enough, Matty, I mentioned that I was I went to the beach earlier. I was actually with Packham, and we were sat outside of to make this conversation even more relevant. We were sat outside of Dave Gilmore's house because he is having a house built in Brighton. And we were literally sat outside whilst they're working on it. Not like waiting for him or anything. That's just a part of the beach that we like to go to.
Did you see him surfing?
No, didn't see him surfing, not this time. But we were talking about it and talking about just kind of the relevance of different, you know, a subject that I bring up quite a lot and I really like talking about, the relevance of guitar players within kind of their sphere of influence. And actually how we got to it was, we were, believe it or not, me and Mark were talking about the Ramones and just about how, you know, outside of kind of the world of like people that are into punk music and kind of people that are into music very specifically, you know, I'm not sure that the Ramones are a particularly well-known band. You know, like, my parents wouldn't be able to name a Ramones song. Like, would any of your parents be able to, if you said, like, can you name me a
definitely
song?
Definitely not my parents.
Or can you name me, like, one of the people that are in the Ramones? And you think about it, like, Johnny Ramone, it's like, they moved, like, rock and roll music forward in a way that, like, very few other bands ever had. Like, you know, they basically invent, they kind of brought punk to the masses. You know, they didn't invent it, but like, they brought that to, like, they brought this new style of music into the mainstream, and like, people won't have heard of that. And Dave Gilmore, I think, and Pink Floyd as a whole did something similar, but like, what they were doing was, they were very, very good at playing a type of music that kind of already existed. And I think that Nirvana did something similar, but they did it at a time when the idea of like the celebrity was more important than the band themselves. And, you know, Cobain is massive and like hugely, hugely influential. And no, I completely agree with you. I'm not surprised that this guitar has sold for more money than the Black Strat. And actually, I think that it's well deserved, because I think that this guitar is used on, I mean, it's certainly my favorite Nirvana album. That Unplugged in New York album is just, it's unbelievable. It's so, so good. And really shows off like Nirvana's kind of musical. It shows them for being a really good and diverse band.
Yeah. I think, yeah, we were talking about this. I was talking about it with a friend earlier, actually. I'm just like, you got to think, that record was what, 1993, 1994?
It was 94, yeah.
94. And we were talking about, because we were talking about Steve Vai, we were saying that Passion and Warfare was like this, you know, I think the pinnacle of like the shred guitar album, you know, and that was 1990. And then, you know, Nevermind comes along and they're just like, you don't need to be able to shred to play guitar,
yeah, and
be
I think
in a band,
and
I, and
to
I think it,
play guitar to play guitar.
Yeah, I just, you know, I think it encouraged, it probably he probably encouraged more people to play guitar than, I'd say, in my opinion the only person who's probably come close as a recognizable person is Slash, in terms of bringing people to play guitar, and still brings people to playing guitar today.
I think that's probably the case for people kind of our generation, but you know, even think back to when we were working at GAC together.
Guitar Nerds is brought to you in association with Faith Guitars. Based right here in the UK, Faith Guitars are designed by British guitar luthier Patrick James Eggle, who has been hand-building guitars for decades for some of the biggest names in the business. Founded in 2002, Faith Guitars have been voted the UK's best acoustic guitars 5 times in a row by both the public and panels of music industry experts, so you can be confident in your new Faith guitar. Like all quality acoustics, Faith guitars are made of all solid tone wood, so you can be sure they'll start off sounding great and improve year on year. Faith don't use laminated woods, but you'll be pleased to know that despite the all solid tone woods, the superb specification and handmade construction, Faith guitars are still affordable, with prices starting at around £450 or $600. Discover the range at faithguitars.com and then visit one of the many UK or European retailers to try them for yourself. But hold up. If you're in the USA or Canada, you can buy direct at faithguitarsusa.com. And by using the coupon code NERDS at the checkout, you can get an exclusive 10% discount. So in the UK and Europe, check out the guitars at your local dealer or faithguitars.com. But for North American listeners, buy direct at faithguitarsusa.com and use the coupon code NERDS for a special 10% off at the checkout. That's USA coupon code NERDS at the checkout. Faith Guitars, award-winning acoustics designed right here in the UK. One of the most popular Ernie Ball Music Man models, the John Petrucci Majesty, is being expanded with four brand new striking finishes. Now offered in Pink Sand, Red Phoenix, Smoked Pearl, and Ember Glow, the 2020 Majesty features a lightweight Akume body, signature Damasio Rainmaker and Dreamcatcher pickups, and an onboard piezo bridge system that gives the guitar a focused and highly versatile palette of tones. Head to music-man.com to learn more. That's music-man. Now, back to the show.
I'm not sure necessarily that people were in there because they were, I don't think they were in there buying their first guitar because they wanted to be like Slash or because they wanted to be like Kurt Cobain. Maybe Kurt Cobain, actually, but really, I think that the new start, the new era of guitar heroes is people like Taylor Swift, is people like Ed Sheeran. You know, those Absolutely. Are the people that are driving and Billie Eilish as well. You know, those are people who are driving new guitar players to pick up new and young guitar players to pick up guitar for the first time.
Acoustic
and
guitars,
that is
yeah.
fine and it's great. You know, I didn't pick up the guitar because I wanted to be like Dave Gilmour. I picked up the guitar because I wanted to be like Noodles from The Offspring. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, because that was the music that I was into when I was 12 and still am. Thank you very much, Joe, before you get in there. but, you know, it doesn't matter why you pick up a guitar. It doesn't matter why you get into this sort of stuff. And I'm sure that there will be people out there saying, oh, it's an outrage that this has sold for blah, 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 blah. But to go back to your original point, you're completely right. And Kurt Cobain is hugely influential, and not just for his work as a guitar player, just kind of bringing people into rock music.
Yeah. I think the other thing that I think is very good about this, so... It sold, yeah, for...
Is it like $6 million or something?
$6 million, yeah. From Julian's auction in Beverly Hills.
It was estimated to sell for $1 million.
$1
million, yeah. Yeah, so but they always do that, don't they?
Oh, of course.
I had no idea at the time. I didn't think it would ever get up to that. But it was bought by Peter Friedman, who is the owner of Rode Microphones. So the... grandson, I think, or the, I think the grandson, no, the son of the founder of Rode Microphones and Friedman Electronics. And not someone I would have expected. I certainly would have, so when I read that, I was like, oh, wow. It's, you know, it's bought by someone in the industry.
Yeah, that's really cool.
You know, because, you know, the Gilmour, and I'm sure he's a lovely guy and he's got a great collection, the guy that bought the Gilmour Strat and stuff. But, you know, he's gone... I want to tour this guitar around galleries and around art spaces, you know, with all of the proceeds going to help artists, to help highlight the plight of artists worldwide. And then I'm going to sell it and I'm going to use that money as well. So yeah, I want this to be a positive chapter in the guitar's life.
His statement about it has been fantastic. And I also thought it was really hard to talk about people being humble when they've just sort of spent £6 million on a crappy old acoustic. But it was a very humble statement. And you know, what was nice is he also turned up, he went to the auction in person rather than bidding sort of, you know, separately via proxy or
I definitely
online.
Would. If I was that rich and I was bidding, I was like, I'd want to be in the room. None of this phone bidding. you know, I'd want to be in there. But what's crazy, if you think about it as well, that will be the tax-free hammer down price. So there'll be commission on top of that. So the auction house will likely take a commission, probably 10 to 20%.
Yeah, that's how it works in this country. Well. It might not be the same in the
I think it's similar, but yeah, if you know, that's always the thing. You go to an auction, you're like, oh, I got it for 100 quid, and it's like, oh, actually, I've got to pay tax and commission on top of that. But yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to see it in, you know, galleries or spaces where, you know, it will benefit musicians, especially at a time now when we kind of need that.
Yeah, yeah, lovely. Lovely that such an iconic instrument isn't just going into some rich guy's sort of collection behind doors. You know, nice that it's actually going to still be a part of, you know, public life, as it were.
Yeah, I wonder what Kurt Cobain would have made of it had he been able to, like, see it sell for that much money.
I mean, I'm sure he would have thought it was absolutely ridiculous. But
And it does raise the question, what guitar...
What will be next?
Because I thought the one that springs to mind as an iconic guitar is Brian May's guitar.
Oh,
the Red Special.
Yeah, the Red Special. And then I was like, but has he had the
same one?
He has had the same one.
No, I was thinking, has he had the same impact that Kurt Cobain's had? And that's, again, just going back to that, you know, the value of Kurt Cobain. The only other one I could think of, or would potentially be Slash, you know, his 58 Les Paul, maybe.
I think also Springsteen's Esquire.
The Esquire, yeah.
Because that is... like,
got a great
it's got a great story. And also, Bruce Springsteen is a, like, level of rock star that is just... unfathomable by most. You can't understand how big he is and how popular he is, and also more importantly, how, like, you know, his fans are kind of generally of a certain age, and therefore have got a little bit of money knocking about. So I'm not sure that guitar would go for $6 million.
Maybe not,
but I reckon it would go for a lot.
Yeah, but I think it says a lot about Kurt Cobain's value to people when his cardigan sold for $300,000 or something ridiculous.
It's a great cardigan. But so other guitars that are iconic and are going to sell for a load of money. We, of course, the Kurt Cobain auction eclipsed the Prince Blue Angel auction. His cloud guitar.
How much did that go for?
Cloud guitar. It happened only 2 days prior to this, and it sold for it's still a massive amount of money, but $500,000.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Everyone was saving their money for the Kurt Cobain auction, I think.
Yeah.
Really, really poor timing. Really poor time. I've done that with gigs in the past. It's a nightmare.
I think there's a number of factors. I mean, obviously, with any auction, if there's two people who really want it, it will always drive the price super high. Because when you've got that level of wealth, I was 100 grand if you're a billionaire.
You know,
so I think if two people want something... that always drives it up, you know. And I just think, again, he's just him as a player of his time, it just stands out more. Such an iconic image of him just sort of sitting there in that unplugged studio and sort of doing that.
Yeah, it's definitely an image that's kind of, I guess, burnt into the retinas of pop culture.
And then you think, like, the most expensive painting ever sold was $155 million. You kind of go,
Yeah.
If someone could spend $155 million on a painting, then $6 million for a guitar kind of seems pretty small at that point. But I wouldn't be surprised, Jay, as you said, in 20, 30 years' time, it'll be an Ed Sheeran guitar, or it'll be something that Taylor Swift played or something like that. You know, that next generation of guitar players.
Yeah, and long may it continue. You know, long may it. Absolutely. I hope that it gets to a point where
the Joe Branton Stonefield.
No. Yeah.
6 million.
Yeah, only because the economy's collapsed and like a loaf of bread is 7 million.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, oh, indeed.
Dear. Anyway, so I moving on from the Kurt Cobain guitar. I last week before the weekend, I asked the members of the Guitar Nerds Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum, I asked them for any questions that they would like to ask either both of you, Matt and Jay, or one or the other. So I've got a little list together of those questions. I just thought we could go through them and kind of, you know, dig deeper into the heart and soul and mind of the two of you.
Joe, can I just jump in and say Baja Telecaster and Blues Junior. Thank you very much. I'll see you later.
Not mentioned that much recently. It's certainly been one that's been less mentioned. Yeah.
I sold my Baja Telly recently.
Disgraceful.
Well, yeah. Anyway, so let's start Jay off with these questions. And I guess staying on that theme, one of the first questions that was asked Jay on this list was, what is your favourite Fender amplifier?
My favourite Fender amp. So I've got a Princeton, which I really like. It's an FSR model that's got a 12-inch speaker, which I've always thought that sounded better than a 10-inch speaker. And that's always kind of what's put me off buying a Princeton in the past. But I guess one of my favourite... It's so difficult because there's so many. And actually, I could just probably say Blues Junior, but that's not really true in this case. I tell you, one of the amps that I think is discontinued and I absolutely loved was the old 410 Hot Rod DeVilles.
Yeah.
Oh man, they sounded so good, so good. And basically anything big like that, I'm super into. Like I'd love to have a super reverb at some point. And I mean, I've never seen one, but like the Super 6 as well. Have you seen that? It's a 6x12.
Do you not remember? We had one of those secondhand.
A Super 6?
In Gak. I'm sure it was a Super 6, or maybe it was just a Super Reverb.
Sorry,
it was
6x10. Like, it's not super. It's not a. Not a.
It was busted, and right. The guy wanted to ship it to India. I remember. He was like, he lived in the UK, but he had family there, and he was like, I really want it. And we were like, you pay for the shipping, like we will send it, but it was so heavy and it was massive, and it was a 70s Silverface one as well, so it had like
fantastic
big old valves in it.
I don't really know anything about the Super 6. I've obviously seen them around, but I really don't know much about them. I don't think I've ever heard one in person
I've never heard one. But so basically a Super Reverb is another 4x10. So basically it's like a twin. So it's 45 watts, and essentially it's a twin, but it has 410s instead of 212s. And they're absolutely massive. They're still current. You can still buy them. They're still it's in the Fender catalog, and they're absolutely wicked. And then the Super 6 is a 6x10 twin, essentially. Not twin, I guess. Yeah. whatever six septuplet. So they're massive. They sound so like ringy and punchy, and they're absolutely fantastic. But you know, the fact that they're $2,000, that I mean, that's the start of your problems. You know, the bigger issue is the fact that you're trying to buy this amp that weighs about 15 tons. I would say just getting it from your car to your house is a bigger issue, let alone shipping it to India.
I would just like to add to this as well, one of my favorite Fender amps, which I've not thought about for a long time until you asked this question. I was like, oh yeah, there was a run of Fender 65 Twin Custom 15s, which was a limited edition twin with a 15-inch speaker.
Yeah.
And the vibrato sounded so swampy and so massive because of that 15-inch speaker. And I was just like, I remember hearing it. Because at the time, I think it was only like, I don't know, 1199 or 1299. I was just like, that guitar sounds, that amp sounds absolutely ace. But you're right, the old DeVille, the 4x10, I remember trying one in my very first guitar shop and just being like, it's great. Great clean channel. And more recently, the ML, Mike Landau.
Yeah.
Was the same. That was 410 as well, I think, wasn't it?
No, I don't think that was 410. I could be wrong. I thought that was a two. I thought that was a 112 actually.
But I thought that was a great little amp because it just took away everything, didn't it? It was a 212. I just checked here. Mike Landau Hot Rod DeVille 212.
Very weird amp that, because both channels were the same.
Yes.
So there was no, you just set them up differently. Yeah, really.
And slightly different Celestians in it as well, I believe. Yeah. Fender have definitely done some absolutely killer, like, limited ones. But I'd say the custom 15.
Yeah, that was a cool amp. Very cool.
Yeah, very cool indeed. Matt Knight, I don't know if you can answer this second question. One of the questions we got asked was, can you offer examples, tricks or tips of how to integrate a loop switcher like the ESA within a large pedal board, one that has more pedals than loops?
Yes, I can. And I'll make it relatively quick because it could go on for hours. There's a couple of things that I would suggest. So obviously the common problem... say common problem that a lot of people have when they go to an ES8 is that they have more than 8 pedals. So you go, well, what, you know, I got a loop switcher, so I could, you know, have all my pedals in loops and then turn them on and off individually and make combinations and whatever. So what options do you, can you use? And there's a couple of things that I use. One is I've got some pedals that are MIDI controlled, so you can turn them on and off via MIDI. But the best solution in my eyes is buying something like the Morningstar ML5 switcher. So that's an additional 5 loops, true bypass loops, that are controlled via MIDI. So if you're using an ES8, you can run all your pedals in your 8 loops, and then before or after or anywhere in the signal chain, you can run out into this ML5 loop switcher, and you've effectively got 5 more true bypass loops.
I understand. So each patch is actually, whilst it's turning on, say, loop 1 of 8, it's turning on loop 1 of 8 and then patch 2 of five afterwards.
You know,
wonderful.
Say if you ran guitar into the ML5 and then into your ES8, you'd have 5 pedals on 5 different loops, and then you have an ES8 with 8 loops, and you can send a MIDI message to the ML5 to say turn on any one of those first 5. So that's a good way to really expand your pedal board.
That's a fantastic solution that I know sounds very obvious to you because you're so MIDI centric, but to me, as someone that sort of kind of stayed out of that sort of thing, that does actually seem like a very easy solution.
And our friend James at Bright Onion also makes a more simple sort of analog solution, which is a dual loop switcher, which is just an analog two true bypass loops that can be switched on and off with a TRS cable. So you could plug a 2-button foot switch in and just flick between 2 settings, or something like an ES8 can do that remotely as well. So that's what I do right now. I'm always happy to post a couple of examples in the Facebook group or something about
that'd be great. I think you should, because you often come up with tricks that you think are just like, oh, there's the solution, whereas actually for a lot of people I think there would be real eureka moments. So
Morningstar make in my opinion the best MIDI loop switchers at the moment if you want to expand your pedal board. So
how much is
those.
A Morningstar switcher?
They are so you can buy them from Thorpe. Thorpe is actually the European distributor for Morningstar at the moment, and I'm just having a look. So their ML5 MIDI loop switcher is 199.
That's quite reasonable considering how much it allows you to do.
Yeah, and don't forget, you know, if you bought just a simple MIDI controller, you don't have to have an ES8, you can still have MIDI controlled five loops MIDI controlled. So you could get an MS3, for example, and expand it by another five loops if you wanted to do that. Or you could even just buy a simple, Behringer MIDI foot controller, and you can just use that as a loop switcher. So yeah, it's a very versatile option.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Jay Cross, moving on to you. You've been asked, how many gigs, give or take a few hundred, have you attended? Do you have a list?
Do I have a list? Yeah. So I actually started working on a list maybe like 3 or 4 years ago, maybe a bit longer than that. And I had this intention. It's something that I've been trying to do forever, and I just never did it, basically. And then I would constantly just say, oh, well, you know, I've kind of been to too many now, so there's no point in me trying it again. And but anyway, so it's probably like 4 years ago I started like trying to put something together to just like get a list of all the shows that I'd ever been to. But like, it's very difficult because, I mean, I started going to gigs in like 2002, and obviously there's very little in the way of kind of internet like archiving from like small crap punk gigs in 2002, so trying to find any information on that sort of stuff is difficult. But like, I've just pulled it up actually just before you asked that question, and the list that I've got up there at the moment has got like 750. So that's kind of, I would say maybe like, I really don't know. It's probably 1500 or so. There's like maybe a little bit less than that, but like, there's like a couple of dark periods which I don't remember too much about, like 2013 to 2014, where I was very depressed and very miserable and going out basically every night to gigs to watch bands that I didn't really care about, which is, I think, it's probably around the sort of time I saw Polymath a few times actually, but I'm sure that's unrelated. But sure. Yeah, so I'd say probably, I'd say probably 1200 shows, maybe. Wow. Something like that.
That is your absolute expertise, gig going. That's like your superpower.
I really like cataloging stuff, which is probably a bit boring to most people, but yeah, that's the one thing that kind of does annoy me, is that there's just so much from kind of when I first moved to Brighton, so 2006 or so, 2006, where I just, you know, I was going, but there's just no record of anything, and I'll never find it. And it, at the end of the day, it also doesn't matter, because who cares except me? So, you know.
So because you've been to so many shows, how much do you invest, and do you invest in good earplugs? Is that something that's important to you because of how many gigs you attend?
Yeah, it is actually, that's a very timely question, because I actually just lost my earplugs on Saturday. They are always on my carabiner with my keys, and I was on the beach and I must have just sat on them and lost them, which is really annoying. So, but it is going to spur me into buying some proper earplugs. So, I mean, I've had tinnitus since I was probably 17 or 18. Like, I've always had tinnitus. I didn't look after my ears when I was a teenager. I didn't look after them at all. And actually, I kind of saw it, because I was a dumb punk child, I saw it as a bit of a badge of honor, being like, oh yeah, tinnitus, wicked, yeah, I've been loud music, yeah, look at me. And now, you know, where are we, like twice my life on from that, I am like, you total Wally. Yeah. Because yeah, I was thinking about it this week. I thought that this period where I haven't been going to any, it's been, you know, what, like nearly 4 months or so since anybody went to a show. And I thought that it might have died down over this period, but it absolutely has not. So I would recommend to everybody that they go and get some proper earplugs. So I've actually been looking at getting some like molded ACS.
Oh, do you not use molded?
No, I actually never have. I've gone through different things in the past. I used some The ones that I was using recently were just kind of some they were actually a Fender earplug that was a prototype that a product that never ended up getting made because they were going to be too expensive. So I had those and they've gone. I don't think I'll be able to get another pair, which is a real drag. Nice. Before that, I used the Etymotic earplugs. They were really good. Etymotic, a really interesting company. They claim to have invented the in-ear headphone in like the 80s at some point. Right. And they came from being a hearing aid company, and so their like bread and butter had always been like hearing protection and kind of research into ear health and stuff. So their earplugs, the ER20s, are really good, and I really rate those. And other than that, I've used all sorts of stuff. The Alpines, which were like just kind of your classic guitar shop 20 quid earplug. But no, I've never gone down the route of molded earplugs. It's something that's creeped me out a little bit, but I think I'll do it. You've got them, don't you? You've got them with some Shure SE215s, right?
I use SE215s just as my standard headphone. But
yeah.
Yes, I also use them in a studio instead of having over ears. But I have those always on my belt, and I sometimes forget my earplugs, which is why sometimes at shows I'll use the 215s because they're quite good at being noise cancelling.
Yeah.
But I do have a set of molded ACS earplugs. And the great thing about those is you can change the filter. So when I originally got those made, I had them made at a 17 decibel cut, but I found as a bass player, because bass frequencies tend to be the first thing that you lose, I guess, as stuff gets quieter, I found I just couldn't hear myself enough in comparison to everything else. So I changed them out for a 10 decibel filter, which was perfectly good and fantastic for sort of the level. But I thoroughly, thoroughly recommend molded earplugs to anyone.
Yeah.
I know it's an expense. Like it's whatever it is, 130, 150 quid for a set of molded earplugs. I know that's a relative amount of money to spend out when you know for something that doesn't have cool lights or six strings, you know.
It's definitely worth it. It's the same as what we say about all sorts of stuff, you know. Like, it's boring spending 150 quid on a power supply, but you know, we've all done it because it's not boring to spend 150 quid on a power supply. but it's important to do, and it's the same with the pedal board. Like, you know, people go out there and they spend 200 quid on a angled piece of metal, and it's like, well, you know, that's not exactly sexy and cool, is it? But like, it is important to have. And and actually, ear health is even more important than any of those things, because you only get two. Once they're gone, they're gone. So I guess if there's any podcast listeners have any recommendations of anything else, any other molded earplugs, please let me know, because I am happy to spend a bit of money and get it done properly.
There you go. Good thinking. Now, we've got time for one more question, but we've hardly got through this list of questions at all. So, you know what? Next week, I think we're markless as well next week. So maybe we'll actually continue these questions for Matt and Jay, because I think they're pretty good and they've brought up some great discussion. So let's do one more, and let's do a question that both of you will get a turn to answer. And I guess the question is, if you had to build a Fender / Boss free rig, what would it be? What would you use? And I guess I don't know, how do we do that? Should we say, you know, Jay, if you weren't playing a Fender, what would you play? And Matt, like if you had to build a board of basics and not have anything from Boss, what would it be? I guess we split it out like that.
We can do that. Jay, do you want to go first?
Well, I mean, this is actually fairly easy for me, because I've been keeping my eyes open for a nice plain top Les Paul Standard.
You have, and you have passed up some.
Up a couple. But the problem is, Joe, is I'm not sure if you're aware, but we are in the middle of a global pandemic, and so I'm just being a little bit more careful about my spending decisions. And it doesn't seem like it. It seems a little frivolous to be. I'm a bass player, you know what I mean? Like, I've got all of these guitars here, but I do really want a really nice plain top Gibson Les Paul Standard from probably like I mean, really, like, there was a wicked 70s one that I really should have bought, and I just... I'm such an idiot, but it's fine. It's fine. But I'm always on the lookout. So, yeah, I would say, yeah, plain top Les Paul standard. I used to have one. I loved it. We've talked about it a million times, and I shouldn't have sold it, but I did. And that's just what happens, is we buy stuff and then we sell it because we're idiots. And that into a, I guess if I'm doing a non-Fender amp, then I'd probably say a Marshall 1974X because they're just absolutely wicked.
Oh, that's actually a great combo.
Yeah, yeah. Wait, what? The guitar and the amp, or just the amp is a good combo?
The guitar and the amplifier.
Okay, yeah. Also, the amp is a good combo. Well. So, I'd probably go. I think that's a really Dan, friend of the podcast, Dan Grace, has got a he's got a Marshall 1974X, and he plays that alongside his Bassman 50 a lot of the time. And it's what a rig, what a man.
true that.
What a rig, what a man. Okay, those were some great choices. Matt Knight, I want to hear, I don't know quite how we do this,
right?
I guess I
was thinking about how this could be a potential way that it goes down.
Okay, so
I thought I would pick my, so I'm sort of looking at my pedal board now, and I'm sort of piecing it together. I'm sort of rebuilding it at the moment, and I'm looking at the pedals that I use the most that I couldn't necessarily do without. So the first one's Boss DD2.
Wait, what? Oh, yeah. What? I don't understand how you're doing
this. So what I'm going to do is pick those ones, and then I'm going to pick a modern day equivalent that is a non-Boss version.
Right, I understand.
So, yeah, Boss DD2 for me. I just think it's... And the thing about the DD2 is it's basically analog. it's one of these really old... big old delay chips in it that we used back in the early rack days. And it's got a particular sound to it. It doesn't have the kind of high sort of quality repeats that a modern digital delay has. So if I couldn't have that and I had to pick a delay pedal that wasn't available now, that you can still pick up relatively cheap, which I think is a good alternative, is the Ibanez DE7, which is definitely going up in price at the moment because it's, I think people are starting to realize it has a magical tone all of its own. But if I had to buy a modern day sort of delay pedal that sort of covers a lot of those features, and one that I've got here, which is very good, is... The Lucky Cat, or the what was previously the Pink Panther from JHS, I thought was very, very good. Super simple to use, based on that kind of DD5, DE7 sort of vibe. If I wasn't necessarily just going for the digital thing and I just wanted a really good delay pedal that wasn't Boss, I would probably say the El Capistan.
Oh, that is good.
You know, again, Strymon El Capistan, just a fantastic delay pedal. Now, the other one is my Boss FZ2 Hyper Fuzz, which is based on a Univox Super Fuzz, which is an old 70s fuzz pedal. Now, Behringer actually make a clone of this, which people have been raving about quite a lot. But I actually think that one of the other hidden gems out there is the Danelectro French Toast, which is a very, very similar circuit. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if it was almost exactly the same circuit. That Univox Super Fuzz, which is basically a sort of germanium-style fuzz with an octave up. So, you know, when you sort of go for those high-up bends, you get that kind of ring modulator type of vibe.
Right.
Now, if you wanted a modern-day equivalent that you could just pick up and use right now... I would actually go for a slightly different route. I would go for a fuzz pedal that you really like, and then I would pair it with a passive octave up pedal. So I would go for something like the Bigfoot Engineering King Fuzz, and then pair it with their what's it called?
Octopus.
The Octopus. That's it. I was thinking of the Octopus Prime, which is actually... both of them in one box. But I like the versatility of having it on two different buttons. So you can add the octave in whenever you want. But yeah, something like the King Fuzz. King Fuzz. Fuzz King.
I don't think we can mention Bigfoot Engineering without just quickly talking about a photo that surfaced this week.
Oh, I should probably put it in the group.
You should absolutely put it in the group. So a photo from an ex-colleague of ours from GAC surfaced this week of Matt and Reese from the aforementioned Bigfoot Engineering from before he was doing that, when he was just working at GAC. And this actually, this predates both Joe and I working at the shop. This is from like 2008. And Matt and Reese.
It predates GAC being called GAC. It's when GAC was the Guitar Amp and Keyboard Center.
But they I got caught up there, and I just I had flashback of moments of people being like, actually it's Guitar Amp and Keyboard Center, and me being like, okay, whatever. Sorry. But yeah, it's a great photo of Matt and Reese just stood there in the middle of a in the middle of the Epiphone Les Paul section, and honestly it looks like you could have both been like smoking cigarettes. It really just looks like you're just stood there just like, whatever, leave me alone. It's a fantastic picture.
2008, I mean, just like, we were so young, we knew so little. And also what I love in the background guitar wise there's a Pirates of the Caribbean Epiphone Les Paul and the Airstreamer, which was the Epiphone that was shaped like one of those Airstreamer caravans.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And the guy who bought it, I remember because it hung on the wall for ages. The guy that bought it, we were like, what are you going to do with it? He was like, I own an Airstreamer. It's a recording studio. I'm going to put it in there. We were just like, brilliant.
Good old boy. Fantastic.
Man, I was trying to work out when I actually started. Did I start in 2008? I think I started in 2007, so I've probably been there about a year. But yeah, wow, just good times.
Great photo, great photo. Yeah, get it up in the group there, Matty.
I will do, I will do.
Excellent. So were you done with your list as well, Matt?
Yeah, I think so. Just Bigfoot Engineering, King Fuzz, and yeah, they're Octopus, I think, if you want a modern day sort of octave up fun with your fuzz.
Very cool. Well, that pretty much brings us to a close of this week's free episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast then. You can, of course, listen to an entire extra episode of Guitar Nerds every week over on our Patreon site, patreon.com/guitar nerds. You can find that in the description of this podcast also. Last week, we finished Mark's series, Gear There and Everywhere, all about the Beatles gear. Obviously, listener, if you haven't heard that and you are a Patreon member, or if you want to become a Patreon member, you can go back and listen to that entire series. But this week, we'll start a new mini-series, another four-part series, this time with just me. And this one is called the 90s... Yes, I changed its name last minute. Oh, I forgot what it was called then for a minute. This one's called The 1979 Club, and it is all about, each week I'm going to be taking five pieces of equipment made before 1979, and I'm going to be talking in depth about each of them. And they're always going to be, there's going to be a theme that ties the five of them together, and it's always going to be weird, unusual, hidden gems from our history. But yes, for the first episode, I guess, you know, simply because of, you know, what I do outside of Nerds with the Harlequin Guitar Club, I'm talking a lot about
I see what's going on here.
I see what's going on.
Basically I've got this old piece of junk that I can't shift, so I'm gonna do a podcast episode about it.
Right Yeah, of course. Of course. No, but I talk about lots of stuff. I talk about Japanese and American vintage guitars. It's basically, I essentially am talking about the best vintage guitars that you can buy at the moment for £500. So think of it, listener, as a buyer's guide to your sort of introduction to weird vintage guitars. I was pretty happy with it. So give it a listen. And to do that, you can become a Patreon supporter. You can do that at three tiers. There's a dollar tier, which gets you this episode ad-free and early every month. Then you have the $5 tier, which will allow you access to all our back catalogue of episodes, as well as getting the podcast ad-free and early, and the $10 tier, which means you get all of those things, plus your name gets sung in the podcast outro song, which I'm probably gonna change the song up soon, maybe like a mid-year song change coming soon. So mid-year. We'll see about that. Yeah.
Multravox.
You what?
Oh, me? Yes. Don't worry.
Yeah, okay, very well. And speaking of mid-year, you know, it's coming up for us to... We normally would be doing the Gear of the Year halfway point. We'd normally do that in about a month's time.
Crikey.
We could do that for all the sort of five things that have been released this year. it'll be short episodes, I'm sure. You can follow us on all the major social platforms with @GuitarNerds and join us on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/GuitarNerdsForum. Thanks very much for tuning in. We'll be back next week with more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Cheers, gang.
Bye.
Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OSEAMalibu.com, code MOM.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.